Hello, listeners. This podcast is hosted by International Idea. In the next minutes, we will help you make sense of what's happening today in democracy worldwide.
Welcome to a new episode of Democracy Ideas Podcast. My name is Violet Marmer. I'm an intern with the communications team this summer at International Idea. At Idea, gender equality and inclusion in democracy is one of the Institute's main themes. The Institute believes that, quote, inclusive and accountable democratic institutions and processes are only possible if gender equality and inclusion of marginalized groups in democratic processes and institutions is attained. In today's podcast episode, we will be exploring the wide-ranging, quintessential themes and questions in order to gain a broad understanding of the current state of gender equality in democracy globally, and the steps that have been taken to get us here, and the steps that need to be taken further in the future. To help us understand this topic further, I am joined by Rumbitzai, who is International Idea's Senior Advisor for Democracy and Inclusion, a gender inequality advocate and practitioner. Thank you so much for joining today, Rumbitzai.
Thank you, Violet, for having me.
Of course. I wanted to start off our conversation a bit broadly to help our listeners get a comprehensive understanding of the many mechanisms and aspects that tie into the topic of gender equality and inclusion in democracy. My first question is, what are the key issues related to gender in democracy building, and what are the measures that have been implemented to promote gender equality in democracy building processes?
Thank you. With regards to the key issues on gender equality in democracy building, it's very important to underline and underscore the issues around marginalization and underrepresentation. And in order to do that, we need to place emphasis on the priority areas of work of International Idea. International Idea places emphasis and invests a lot on electoral processes, constitution building processes, and political participation and representation processes. Therefore, to start off by highlighting the key issues as you have asked, it's important, for instance, if we concentrate on the area of political participation and representation in relation to the issues of marginalization and underrepresentation. What are the gender issues in that sphere of public life, of political participation and representation? In order to do that, we need to interrogate and unpack the issues around political systems, the issues on political parties, for instance, how political parties are structured, even how they are founded and how they operate. And that connects a lot, very central to that, the function of political parties is, of course, their mandate, but also their internal party democracy processes. Political systems, for instance, they set up the context, the politics context, political context of a country. And that, to a very large extent, from the research that International Idea has done, we see it is predominantly male and tends to be, political systems tend to be informed and driven by the male mode of politics. And once we have such setups, you realize that issues of gender inequality are perennial. Why? Because politics and political spheres, the political sphere as it is defined right now, there is the stereotypes, there are stereotypes, and there is the perception that being male is equivalent to or is tantamount to being in leadership. And therefore, and being female means you lack the leadership skills to be in positions of power and decision making. And that already is one of the key issues that we are grappling with as part of democracy building worldwide. How to have transformative agendas and transformation of political systems and political parties, starting from their foundations. For example, If you are to analyze and pay attention to political party constitutions and political party policy documents, founding documents, from some of the work that we did as International IDEA, you find that even the language, when a constitution of a political party is referring to the position of the president, for instance, or chairperson of the political party, there are references to he, the chairman he, the secretary general he. And then, as we know, most political parties across the world have established entities that they are called, we are referred to as women's units or women's wings or women's departments in political parties. That's when you see the reference to she. So already, even in the conceptualization of the driving or roadmaps of political parties, it's already done with an assumption or a premise that it will be men who will be in the leadership of the positions, in the leadership positions within the political party itself. And then, of course, it ultimately affects the ability for both women and men and opportunities to stand for elective positions of power and decision making coming through political parties. As we know, for instance, in order to go into parliament, several countries across the world, in order to be elected as a member of parliament, to stand for a position in parliament, election in parliament, or as a, at the local government level, as a councillor or regional council or whatever the terminology is used in each different context, most of that, the avenue for doing that is the political party. So already the gender perceptions and attitudes that exists within political parties and political systems, they create problematic gender issues in relation to marginalization and underrepresentation of women broadly across the world, which is why, for instance, in this current year, 2021, we still have only women constituting about 25% of members of parliaments, an average of 25% of members of parliaments across the world. The other key issue that we need to highlight as well is the issues around electoral processes. And as International IDEA, we place emphasis on electoral processes because we know that elections are ultimately influenced, entirely influenced by the processes building up to the elections. So we don't look at elections as an event, but we look at it from the electoral cycle approach. And if you look at the electoral cycle, whether it's in the pre-election phase, post-election phase, or during the election phase, there are many, many processes that have to be managed and administered. For instance, access to civic and voter education, voter registration processes, political campaigning, and along with that political campaigning comes the issue of political financing, which I should actually have mentioned in relation to what happens within political parties when selecting, identifying and nominating candidates for positions of power and decision making. Political campaigns and election campaigns have really been commercialized. And we know from the evidence across the world who has more resources for political and electoral campaigns, who has more access if you are making a comparison between women and men. Not only access to campaign financing, but starting from just the basic premises of access to economic resources, even at a household level or at the domestic sphere or private sphere. So ordinarily, that also affects the ability for women to then campaign and be able to fund the processes for engaging in electoral campaigns. So electoral processes per se, even the legal framework, the legislative framework, we need also to explore that and see how gender is an integral part. what is provided in the constitutions with regards to electoral processes? What is provided in the electoral law? Is it about equal participation and representation of both women and men and non-binary people and people living with disabilities or people who are differently abled, ethnic minorities or indigenous populations? All of those issues, they are very much integral to what happens within electoral processes. And if electoral processes are not managed and administered from a gender equality and inclusive perspective, they end up marginalizing and creating or resulting in the underrepresentation of several groups of people. The other key issue is related to constitution building processes. Constitutions are the roadmap of countries. They are informed by the country's past experiences, the future, and also the present. So constitutions, in terms of the way they are put in place, that is the process, in terms of the content, there has to be a gender perspective to it. If not, we end up with constitutions that continue to reinforce gender inequalities and perpetuate gender inequalities in different countries across the world. When we are addressing issues of gender equality and inclusion in democracy building processes and institutions, the fundamental goal is about the redistribution of power and voice and influence. And this is where we have a lot of resistance, and this is where gender inequalities, where we have so many drivers of gender inequalities due to the resistance. For instance, the media. How does the media cover women when they are campaigning for election, for elections to be elected into positions of power and decision making? If you make a comparison, if you just watch the mainstream media and even the social media and the platforms, you will see the gender stereotypes and attitude that are perpetuated across. The second part of your question referred to issues around measures. What measures have been implemented in order to address the gender inequalities, the issues that I've raised that are persistent and perennial across the world? There is no one-size-fits-all answer. Countries are implementing different measures. As an example, gender quotas, electoral gender quotas. And the reason why these are important, they are measures that place the responsibility for election of women into positions of power and decision making, just as men place the responsibilities in political parties. Therefore, when political parties are undergoing their intra-party democracy processes on the identification, nomination and selection of candidates, they need to have enabling processes and procedures. One of the issues that we raise as International IDEA is that political parties are the real gatekeepers of who can get elected into positions of power and decision making. And therefore, it is important that some of these measures are implemented starting from within political parties. A lot of advocacy and awareness raising measures have been put in place across the countries, in different countries. Awareness in terms of profiling women as leaders. And also not only profiling women as leaders, but having voices of what we can call male gender equality champions. And such measures of having male gender equality champions are very strategic, because this helps to create an enabling environment which demonstrates that both men and women are responsible for gender equality and women's empowerment in democracy building. So like I said from the onset, there's no one-size-fits-all answer. We need these multidimensional measures. And some of it even starting with education, the education curriculum, showing within the education curriculum, catch them whilst they are still young with regards to understanding gender equality and the responsibility for both women, men, boys and girls and non-binary people on in terms of creating, ensuring that we achieve gender equality and women's empowerment in democracy building as a holistic approach.
Thank you so much for that. I wanted to elaborate on quotas, which you mentioned. So quota systems have served globally as an important tool to recruit women into political positions, you know, and progress the representation of women in parliament and the political sphere of a country. At IDEA, I know that there's the global database on gender quotas in parliaments worldwide, which is a comprehensive tool that utilizes comparative data to understand the progress and status of gender quotas worldwide. I know there are plethora of quota types, and IDEA specifies three main types, which are reserved seats, legislative quotas, and voluntary political party quotas. Could you speak a bit more to the pros and cons of quotas and what you find the most valuable quota system to be?
Gender quotas are popular, but they are also controversial. It's a fact that we need to acknowledge. And having said that, it is important to point out that there's need for understanding and creating awareness on the purpose for gender quotas. Essentially, in relation to democracy building processes, gender quotas serve the purpose of addressing the representation gap, or in other words, addressing the overrepresentation of men in positions of power and decision making at all levels. So if society was gender fair, there wouldn't be need for gender quotas. The controversy around gender quotas is that there's an assumption or a perception that by having gender quotas, we are bringing in incompetent women or women who have no merit into leadership positions or into positions of power in decision making. And that is actually a tragic perception that continues to be communicated in several quarters. However, if we are to give particular attention to the reason why men have been able to attain and have access to positions of power and decision making, it's because they have learned to be leaders. They've had opportunities to be leaders, to be in these positions and learn by doing and gain the experience to be leaders, which opportunities are not essentially equally available to women. Therefore, quotas, in their totality, they are not non-discriminatory. They are not discriminatory. They are not a zero-sum game of saying because women should leave the spaces of power and decision making, but they are a channel of ensuring that both men and women can have opportunities to access, to enter into the spaces of positions of power and decision making. The disadvantage that can be pointed out is when quotas are used as a token mechanism, as a window dressing mechanism, and then it creates backlash against women to say, you see the women who have come through the quotas, they are ineffective. What difference are they making? Yet that even that backlash is very contradictory, or it's a double standard, because you find that the level of demand for effectiveness and accountability and excellent performance is not usually required of and demanded or stated in relation to male leaders. Why am I saying that? If we look at the state of the world, if we look at what we are publishing as International Idea, for instance, in the global state of democracy, through the when in relation to the democracy indices and the different attributes, one of the attributes that we highlight as problematic persistently is the attribute in relation to corruption. And I'm not saying if women are in leadership, they are not going to be corrupt. But I'm saying the standard and the demand for accountability and transparency and effective performance, if the same would be demanded globally from leadership generally, whether male or female, the democracy, the democratic processes and institutions would be very robust, would be strengthened, and would be more sustainable and very effective. So ultimately, the biggest backlash and disadvantage is when quotas are not implemented effectively in line with the purpose that they are originally designed to serve, where there is manipulation, again, from political leaders, where there is even favoritism in the nomination and allocation of seats or positions when quotas are being applied. That creates a backlash, and the backlash and the resistance is always towards women, and that's a big disadvantage. So if indeed we look at what is happening across the world, as we have documented on the International IDEA website on gender quotas, where we have over 100 countries across the world implementing some form of quota, as you have pointed out, whether it's legislated, whether it's voluntary party quotas or reserved seats, different types of temporary special measures, including quotas, you realize that it helps to open the spaces for women to be also able to enter into the spaces of positions of power and decision-making at all levels, just as much as men are able to enter in. But of course, it's important to point out from as well that quotas are not the all-in-all solution. On their own, quotas cannot do anything. There's need to also examine how they are aligned with the electoral systems, the type of electoral system, the broader political context and political environment, and the legislative framework and level of awareness with regards to the socio-cultural and political awareness on the need for gender equality and equal participation and representation of women and men. And also the realization, not only the realization, but recognition of gender equality as a fundamental human right, because it's not an add-on. It's not by the way, it's a fundamental human right, which is cross-cutting, which is a dimension of all the processes that relate to democracy building.
Thank you so much. I'm going to ask a final question. I wanted to thank you so much for this really enlightening conversation and speaking so truthfully about this important issue. I wanted to ask, from your experience working on gender equality and democracy, In your view, what are the future global prospects on this issue of gender equality and democracy?
There are several positive prospects with regards to gender equality globally. The reason why I say that is over the decades, if you see the progress, we take note of the milestones and the gains to place gender equality on the political agenda, global political agenda. That in on its own presents greater prospects. There is no way that we can say at any point and in any country, gender equality will continue to be marginalized, will continue to be a marginal issue. It will remain on the mainstream political global agenda. That is very fundamental in terms of sustaining the issues and in terms of continued awareness raising and capacity building in terms with regards to responding to the gender inequalities within our different societies. The other prospect is that the young generation has a higher level of awareness, if I may say, but that doesn't necessarily mean activism. They have some awareness, a high level of awareness in comparison to the past generations and maybe people of the generations of my time, of my, you know, my age. But that awareness needs to be sustained through activism and initiatives. For instance, a lot of young people prefer to engage in issues-based political activities. And issues on gender equality and women's empowerment, if we relate it, for instance, to the 2030 agenda and the goal, the specific goal number 5 on achieving gender equality, this presents prospects for continuity and sustained investments now being championed by young people with regards to addressing gender inequalities. So that is a positive future prospect that I also see. At the same time, the use of social media and creating awareness. For instance, we know what has happened in the past years with regards to the high level of awareness of the Me Too movement. That was a tool and a platform, really, for driving the gender equality agenda with regards to the elimination and eradication of all forms of discrimination and abuse against women. The other part that I think needs to be noted, of course, is that because of the gains over the years, there is it's an attitude or a perception of taking things for granted. That, for me, in my opinion, is the negative aspect prospect that I see. Taking it for granted that, you know, gender equality is recognized as a fundamental human right, so it will occur. Yet we know it will not just happen by some evolutionary miracle, if you may say, put it that way. There has to be investments, there has to be efforts, there have to be initiatives. So with regards to the future prospects, there are those positive future prospects that I mentioned. It will remain on the global political agenda. And this is important for peace building and security across the world, for development, sustainable development. We know, for instance, the main theme for the 2030 agenda is leave no one behind. And in order to fulfill that vision of leaving no one behind, gender equality and women's empowerment has to remain on the global political agenda for development, for democracy building, for addressing the current issues, economic issues relating to economic issues or climate change. Yet at the same time, there's also a negative of taking these gains and milestones for granted. And therefore, we slow down in terms of the advocacy, we slow down in terms of the campaigns. And I'm sure over the years we've seen it, especially in relation to the reduced resources available for work on gender equality and gender mainstreaming across the world. If I may refer to what we normally call national gender machineries, these are entities established and given the responsibility to drive the national agendas on gender equality and women's empowerment. Most national gender machineries across the world tend to be the most under-resourced entities in governments. And the lack of sufficient resources also points to negative, aspects in the future. Because without resources to keep driving the agenda, to keep providing knowledge-based information and comparative knowledge sharing across the world and good practices, it can undermine the gains that we have had. But I also see the negative prospects with regards to increasing fundamental religious interpretations that perpetuate the notions and perceptions and attitudes that gender equality is not possible because women and men cannot be equal due to various cultural and religious interpretations. So there's need to guard and to continue investing efforts in order to transform those perceptions and attitudes into the next generations, in this generation and into the next generation.
Thank you again, Rumbit Zai, for speaking with me today about gender equality and inclusion in democracy. I really learned so much from this conversation, and I'm feeling inspired for me and my generation to hopefully continue working towards further progressing this important issue.
Thank you for the opportunity to have this discussion with you.
Thank you for listening to the Democracy Ideas podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Democracy Ideas podcast. Keep following International Idea on social media. We need all of you to participate in constructing better societies. Goodbye.